The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Hello and welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and I'm excited about today's show. First, I just want to mention that this morning there was a horrible shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, in an elementary school, a K through 4, and our heart goes out to the families. They lost 20 children and 6 adults. So I'm sure you're listening to that. excuse me. Today we're talking about ending the special education stigma, and we're speaking with Laura Reife, who's, am I pronouncing that correctly, Laura? Reife. Okay, Reife. And, she's been doing a lot of, work helping, families of special education to really understand what it is and what they can do to help their child. And so how can a parent or teacher communicate to a child who's been identified as having learning differences or needing special education that they're really still okay and have a great future ahead of them? And what can they do about bullying or other behaviors of peers which make the child feel bad? Actually, every child has his or her own learning needs. And in an effort to address these needs, various programs have generated a lot of misunderstanding. My guest today is an experienced teacher who has dedicated herself to removing the stigma attached to special education. Laura Reife has created a book which parents can read with their special education child to help both of them deal with the many challenges ahead. Her book is called The Adventures of Naomi Noodles, who we'll hear more about, The Wonderful, Amazing, Splendiferous Me. The first of a series, it helps children and their caregivers overcome any stigma about learning differences and helps both end frustration, misunderstanding, and hurt that can be associated with it. Laura Reife is a special education teacher from Chicago and has been teaching children in special education for over 10 years. Her expertise inspired her to write children's books with a passionate mission to lift the negative stigma of special education by planting the seeds of understanding and compassion through self-esteem. Naomi Noodles, her first book, is an inspirational story about a young girl coping with dyslexia. Naomi faces the confusion of being told she's dyslexic and finds out how dyslexia can affect one's life inside and outside of the learning environment. With a little help from a very special friend, who I hope we'll hear about, Naomi learns how to triumph over the problems and discover just how wonderful she truly is. Laura Reife is also the creator of www.aboutspecialeducation.com. That's about-special-education.com, a website dedicated to supporting the needs of parents of children with learning disabilities. Laura offers valuable resources on her blog also and offers coaching programs for parents. So she's very involved in supporting families where their kids need special education. So welcome to Family First, Laura. It's a pleasure having you here.
Oh, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Great. Well, I'd like to start out by just asking your personal journey. How did you become interested in this field?
Well, when I was going to college, actually, I was going to school for elementary education, and one of my roommates in college, who I became very, very good friends with and very close with her family, had a sister who had a learning disability. And this was very, very new to me. And actually, my roommate was going to school for special education, so it was all kind of very interesting. And I just really fell in love with her sister. She was so interesting to me. She was a little bit older than we were, so she was an adult with a learning disability. And it was just kind of interesting to see where she was in life and how she was navigating her difficulties. And it was just so inspirational to me that I decided to go into the field of special education myself. So that is kind of how I ended up in special education.
Very cool. And so you taught elementary school for a number of years then?
I've been in special ed. I've been in 7th and 8th grade for most of my career. So I've had the middle school sickness, as some people call it. They are personally my favorites. You know, they are still little children but trying to be adults. So the middle school is really my favorite. But that's where I spent most of my career. I did actually leave the field for a while and move on to other interests because I did feel such a frustration with the negative stigma of learning disabilities and the way my students were being treated. Oh, sorry, I'm in my school still.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry about that. So I did leave for a little bit, and then when I moved to Michigan, I was drawn back into education and started working, just falling in love with my kids again and really recognizing their struggles again, which was my original frustration, and just kind of watching their journey and how they deal with the struggles day to day really inspired my mission to try to change the way the world looks at learning disabilities and special education in general. So really, it's been quite a journey, but here I am and I'm loving it. So
good, good. I know you've said that your goal is to lift the negative stigma of learning disabilities by creating an epidemic of compassionate understanding and self-esteem building.
Yeah.
And that it seems so important that that people recognize it's not just a learning disability. There's a whole lot of implications that are unnecessary that impact the child. So can you tell more about that, what you're trying to do away with that stigma through compassionate understanding?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's really important to remember that, I mean, these are people that we're talking about, and their educational needs and problems and difficulties don't start and end at the classroom door. They walk out the classroom door and they have to deal with their peers, they have to deal with their families, and they have to deal with themselves. So I just feel like there's such a misunderstanding from the adults, so naturally there'll be a misunderstanding from children about what learning disabilities actually are. And I think the key thing for people to understand is that in order to qualify for a learning disability, you have to have a normal to above average IQ. So what that means is that your child or you yourself are probably 70% smarter than most of the kids in your class, and unfortunately the stigma is that these are slow learners or things like that, which is simply not true. Their brain just processes information differently, which can cause them to struggle in reading or cause them to struggle in writing and spelling or in mathematics. So that, to me, is the real key misunderstanding that most people have, that the IQ, it's not a matter of your IQ or how, quote-unquote, smart you are. It's just the way your brain sees things. So that is really important for me to get that message out there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and it's such a crucial point. I didn't know that myself, that to have that specific identification, you need to already have the mental ability to do the things, to have that IQ.
Right.
But it's just that the way you process is a little different place on the bell curve from say the average student.
Exactly, exactly, and it's something. You know, you are taught strategies, you learn strategies, and you learn how your brain works, and you just learn how you learn, and the information can get, and you can process the information as well as the next person, probably sometimes even better, but you just kind of have to uncover the mystery of how it can get in and be processed for you. And it's, you know, it's individual, and everyone is an individual learner, so it doesn't seem like it should be such a big surprise, because even students that don't have learning disabilities have learning differences. Some are visual learners, some are auditory learners, things like that. So we all learn very differently, and sometimes our brains just process things differently. But the IQ is intact, like I said, average to above average. So that is really key.
Yeah, that's and to have that kind of concrete information can help people realize that these aren't just, even if a child's having trouble reading, it doesn't mean that that they should be seen as somehow dumb or inadequate or
right.
in any way any way less of a person.
Right, right.
So is that where the self-esteem idea comes in? That because it seems to me if kids are stigmatized, they're not going to even realize that they can learn about themselves and make accommodation, perhaps, and get the help they need.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I think that, you know, when we have meetings with parents, if your child is identified as having a learning disability or under the umbrella of special education, then the whole team at wherever your school is, the administration, there's a special education teacher, a regular education teacher, a psychologist that tests the student. There's a whole gamut of people that will meet with the parent to talk about what's going on, and you develop what's called an individualized education plan, or IEP. And at these meetings, I just think that the parents are overwhelmed with information, and they're feeling a little bit intimidated by what's going on. And for some reason, just the message isn't getting across. And at the IEP meetings or the individualized education plan meetings that I hold, I generally start the meeting by asking the parents if they know what a learning disability is and start that way. And 9 times out of 10, the answer is, well, my child is a slow learner. So that's where it's key, right at the very beginning, we can nip that in the bud and let them know that that's not the case. And once you let them know that it's not an issue of IQ, it's just a processing issue, and there's so many strategies that we can do to change that, their whole body language changes, and their confidence level goes up, and you can tell that they've kind of like shed a little bit of, I don't know if it's shame is the word you want to use, but they just seem to be more confident in what's going on. So I feel like that their self-esteem can translate to their child's self-esteem, because now they can communicate clearly to their kids what exactly is going on. You know, if the parent thinks the child's a slow learner, that's what the child's going to think. So once we have all our stories straight, then we can really build a concrete, solid support system for our students, which is, of course, key to their success, in my opinion.
That's very powerful to be able to get back to the real basics. Do you understand what this means?
Yeah.
And to build, get rid of guilt or shame and focus on the actual need of the child. That's very powerful. So can you tell more about what are the kinds of misunderstandings that you've seen in parents and even teachers as far as the kids that have this need this help?
I'm sorry, that loudspeaker went off again. I apologize.
Yes.
can
you're
you
in a school, so you
yes,
understand.
I apologize for that. Can you just repeat that for me real quick?
Oh, I wanted to ask what actual kinds of misunderstandings have you seen with parents and your colleagues as far as learning disabilities and special education kids?
I think what I had mentioned before earlier with the IQ issue is the main one. But then I think once we get past the IQ issue, once the child is thought of as or is diagnosed with a learning disability or there's suspicion of a learning disability, suddenly there's kind of a little bit of a bigotry of low expectation that's put on the child. Suddenly now we do treat them a little bit differently, maybe lower our standards for their quality of work, for what they can accomplish and things like that. So it's really important. That's where the IQ issue comes in so strongly, because, like I said, it's really, really important that the child knows that they are just as strong of a learner as everybody else. And some of the colleagues that I've worked with in the past have actually really thought of them as slow learners, and, you know, having me work with them almost to a point where, because I would modify the work for them and I will help them learn the strategies that will help them learn, almost like I would be giving them answers or helping them to quote-unquote cheat, if you will. So I think just a really good understanding of what the special education teacher's role is and how they work with the students in the classroom are really key as well, because there is quite a bit of misunderstanding about that.
Oh, that's fascinating. We're up on our first break already. We're speaking with Laura Reif. She's the author of The Adventures of Naomi Noodles, The Wonderful, Amazing, Splendiferous Me. It's a great title. And the idea is that Naomi has dyslexia and all the different experiences she goes through with that identification. So please stay tuned, and we'll be talking with Laura in a few minutes.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're speaking about ending this special education stigma, and we're speaking with Laura Reif, who's a special education teacher in Chicago and has been teaching children in special education for over 10 years. And her expertise inspired her to write a child's book and actually a series, which allows parents and caregivers to better understand what special education means and what it means to the child to avoid stigmas and misunderstandings. So we've been talking about some of the misunderstanding that Laura has encountered in her work with parents and even her colleagues in schools. So let's talk some more about what gets parents and teachers so frustrated with kids with learning disabilities when they don't really understand what's going on for the child?
Well, I think it becomes, as a parent, you feel very frustrated and helpless because you're watching your child be unsuccessful. Usually a child with a learning disability puts in 100% effort with maybe 5% results, if that makes sense.
Yes.
They're working really, really hard on an assignment, and they get it back, and they get an F, perhaps, or a D or an F, because, you know, the effort they put in, just they don't get the results equal to the effort. So the parents get frustrated and feel very helpless because they're watching their child be unsuccessful. As teachers, I feel like it's the same in the classroom. You know, we keep telling them to try harder, to apply themselves, and it's very frustrating for a teacher to, you know, most teachers are very passionate about what they do, and it's very frustrating when you're, you know, when you're not getting through to every single child. And it can be, you know, we make it about ourselves in a way, when really we should be opening up our minds a little bit and seeing what the child is going through. But one thing that I've really noticed is that these feelings of frustration and helplessness really translate to the child as disappointment. which is really dangerous territory, because they're so used to being disappointed. They disappoint themselves all the time. They disappoint their teachers all the time, and they are disappointing their parents with the low grades. So, you know, unbeknownst to us, and without any malice at all, our own feelings of frustration and helplessness translates to them as disappointment. So it's just a big circle of junk that it's not necessary. You know, just simple conversations and really being open and honest and understanding exactly what's going on could really eliminate all these kind of barriers that they're going through.
So that leads us to my next question. I think that as you say, unintentionally and unbeknownst, the parents or the teachers kind of project this sense of disappointment and helplessness on the child. So is that one of the reasons why so many kids with learning differences and special ed needs exhibit behavior problems?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's, I would say, probably the number one reason. You know, you always have your class clowns, which to me, you know, I'm a glutton for punishment, so I kind of enjoy the class clown because generally, and I don't want to make a blanket statement, but, you know, your kids that have ADHD and things like that who are more active in the classroom are thought of as the class clown. And they get actual positive reinforcement from the other kids laughing and things like that. So, you know, that's a behavior that's kind of, if you're a really seasoned teacher, that's pretty easy to nip in the bud. And you can almost play along with it. It doesn't have to be adversarial. In many cases, it can be kind of fun. But for a student who's struggling with reading and things like that, and they're identified so fast by their classmates, and when they have to read out loud, they hear the little snickers and things like that, and, you know, they get poked fun at and probably bullied on the playground and things like that. So, you know, as human beings, we just have that natural fight or flight instinct. And so the kids that are, you know, feeling this pressure and feeling this anxiety in the classroom have no place to fly to, so their natural inclination is to fight. So this is when they start acting out. And, you know, I've seen acting out as very outward and aggressive and defiant, or it can be very inward and withdrawn. So personally, you know, I would prefer the more aggressive or outward behaviors, because then you can recognize it and at least you know there's a problem. You know what I mean?
Yes, not internalizing all that.
Right.
Pain.
So the student that had the inward and the withdrawn symptoms kind of disappears into the cracks, and you're really never quite sure what's going on with them. And they're usually not the type of child that's going to ask for help. So these things really can create behavior issues easily, very easily.
Now, Laura, when you try to get to the parents and help them understand better that it's not some kind of slow learner or IQ deficient person, and they have more compassion and less guilt and more hope. do you see that the child starts to respond a little differently and behavior may modulate?
It really is amazing to watch, because it just seems like a drop of confidence and a drop of encouragement just brings up a wealth of results. It's because they've been searching for help and searching for answers, and they felt so misunderstood for so long. And once you solidify their feelings and come from a place of really trust and love and understanding about what they're going through, it just becomes pretty amazing at what they feel like they can accomplish, because, excuse me, they have all this information locked up in their head that they're dying to get out. And so once you figure out the little passageways to let it out, it's kind of like you can't stop them. You know what I mean? So it's really, really fun to watch. And it's, you know, it's so interesting to me, because it's the difference between self-esteem and their self-image. You know, you can have a really high self-esteem, but it can be supporting a really bad self-image. So if they get mixed up with the wrong group of kids because they feel bad about themselves as learning disabled children or kids in special education, if you will, then they could start having a really high self-esteem and high confidence, but it's supporting a self-image of the misfit or the kid that doesn't fit in, and now they're with this kind of crowd that's accepting that. So it's really important that you try to really work and change the student's self-image so that they can kind of mirror their self-esteem with a positive self-image, that as a very capable learner as a student with a high IQ. You know, this is the combination that you want. So those things are really key. And like I said, you just give them a little drop of confidence and away they go. So it's fun to watch.
Oh, I bet. And
yeah.
I've just heard a couple of different places recently that in some progressive schools, the teachers are actually, instead of just calling the kids, they call them students or mm-hmm. scholars and try to identify them as the learning creatures that we are.
Oh, right. You know, they can do so many fun activities to kind of get this diversity closed off. But I worked with one of my teachers, and we gave a survey about, we had the kids take a survey about the different types of learning styles. And then we had them all get into groups with the different types of learning styles, like I mentioned earlier, with visual learners and auditory learners and tactile learners. And it really opened up their own eyes to see how they learn the best and that kids do learn differently. And, of course, in these different groups, there's a smattering of the special ed kids in each group. So it's not like they're all like some, you know, you put them in, they're all cookie cutter kids. Everybody's different. Everybody learns differently. And it kind of opens up acceptance for diversity, which that was really a fun activity to do. So things like that are really important.
That sounds very effective. And do you find that teachers are open to that kind of group awareness, heightening group awareness?
I find that, well, I mean, I'm really, really lucky. The group of teachers and administrators and support staff that I work with currently have a really amazing understanding of special education and are wonderful with myself and the whole special ed staff and with the kids. So I'm a little bit spoiled. but they do. They love to come and ask, you know, can we do this? How can we do this? You know, what kind of fun accommodations can we do that would involve the whole class and things like that. So they're really, I'm finding, very open to different kinds of things, because there's a huge trend in education now for differentiated learning anyways. So that's really, you know, learning the different levels of learning within the regular education community. So the special ed kids just kind of fit right in there. You know what I mean? So
sure.
Yeah, so it's kind of the trend anyway. So I'm feeling the culture in schools and the parents that I've been working with, I do feel that the culture is definitely changing. So that's a very positive thing.
Yeah, that's great. And especially, I think it's such an important point that you make, that the way that the adults respond to the children teaches the other children how to respond. And that it's not about bullying or ridicule but you'll feel a whole lot better if you show compassion and helping and encouragement.
Right. Especially if you do, you know who the bullies are in your classroom and things like that. So once you have this information about the different learning styles, if you do an activity that's not that child, the bully, so to speak, if that's not their strong suit and they may need a little bit of extra help, you can do something like that just to kind of show them a little bit about how it feels to struggle, things like that. So everybody can get a little bit of idea about what it's like to have them have their own processing and their own learning be challenged. So things like that are really, really important.
So really a diversity of experiences shows that each person has their strengths and weaknesses.
Right, absolutely. And in those types of cases, if you have, one of the special education students can actually help this student, you know what I mean? And so that kind of stuff, I love to see that kind of stuff. And it's becoming really, really popular. So it's really, like I said, fun to watch.
Oh, yes, I bet. So do you find that the other students do catch on, that they are all different and they can treat each other with understanding?
I would answer yes and no to that question. There's always a core group of really great kids that come into the whole situation with an open mind and don't care one way or another, and they just love to be around kids, and they're supportive, and they're sweet. You know, those are your
sure.
ideal kids, you know. But so those kids are there. I have seen kids turn around who started out skeptical and who were the bullies, and I just feel like I had an open and honest conversation with them about exactly what a learning disability is and exactly what is going on with this child. And I guess to them it made a difference, because I don't think anybody's ever explained that to them before, because why would they? You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and in their perception, it's just a natural, it's just natural to pick on whoever is thought of as the weak child. So if someone is having trouble reading, it's instantly perceived as a weakness, so they hone in, and that's what it is. So I've had these really great conversations with these kids. Now, it isn't magical, and it hasn't been 100% effective, but I have seen some changes in attitude, and there's some kids that are really hard to reach, and you'll always have a hard time reaching them, but the effort is there, and I feel like if you can get the majority of kids to not swing in that direction, then if the bully doesn't like to stand alone, the bully's not going to stand alone. So I don't necessarily worry about the hardcore bully. I kind of concentrate on all the other kids around them, because they're not that strong without their group of kids, you know, without their pack. So
yes, that's an important point.
Yeah,
absolutely. Just step away from the bully.
Yeah.
So how do you, when the special ed kids are kind of acting out their insecurities and disappointments with themselves, how do you recommend parents and teachers deal with the behaviors when they see the acting out? The typical response is to pull them in and maybe lecture or discipline, but that's not what these children need. Is that right?
Right. No, not at all. I think that the classroom can become very adversarial, especially if you're having a child that is being outwardly aggressive and defiant, again, because they do get positive reinforcement from their classmates, because everyone's kind of in awe of that, because you're standing up to the adult authority figure. So you kind of want to disarm them. And once you become adversarial and you have a power struggle, that's what all the other kids love to watch. So it's really important to never, never have that power struggle. I just think you need to flip it to letting the kids know that it's a place of trust. I always pull them aside and have a really, really open, I keep going back to this open conversation, honest conversation, but it seems to me to be such a no-brainer and so effective, and just validify the fact that you understand what they're going through, and kind of repeat it to them what you think is going on in their head. And I would have to say that I've had many powerful conversations where it's come to a kid getting ready to throw a desk across the room to crying, not obviously in front of the classroom, you know, we would do this in private, but really letting go. And there's so much anxiety and there's so much anger. There's just so much anger built up inside of them because of the misunderstanding. So I'm such a proponent of this open and honest conversation. And again, it's not going to work every time, but I feel like it's really effective most of the time.
Oh, that is such great advice. I've made that suggestion often with parents with just regular kids and not
right.
necessarily special ed, that
right.
if you one of my favorite things to say is if you're arguing about who has authority in the relationship, you've already lost.
Right.
You might as well go make cookies together, you know, because the child knows darn well that you are in charge. That's
right.
Why you're the adult and they're the child. So rather than let them take control by creating a struggle,
right.
you just back off, be the adult, be the patient, mature one, and
right.
say, hey, we need to talk about this.
Right. You know, you kind of have to take your ego out of it, because
right.
so many, it's our instincts that get the last word. You know, we win if we get the last word. Well, the kid is so stubborn, they're not going to give up. And then you kind of end up looking like a fool because you run out of things to say that is rated PG that you can say in a classroom. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
So it just never works that way. And, you know, you don't need to have the last word. You don't, like you said, take that power struggle away and actually be the adult. So that's here.
Yes,
that.
Be the adult, be the parent, be the teacher.
Right.
And just know that, you know, they're pressing your buttons. And if
yeah.
you just step back from your buttons. You can just see that scenario where the rest of the class, that's much more exciting than doing reviewing the math homework.
Absolutely. But I feel like if you come at it from that really calm place and you don't engage in that power struggle, it's almost like you'll gain the child's trust a little bit more because they know that this is a safe place. They know that you're not trying to hurt them. And when you get into that power struggle, trying to get the last word, it's not friendly. You know, it's hurtful. So you as the adult aren't getting your feelings hurt because you know that the child's acting out of anger. But again, you can't be so sure that you're not hurting that child's feelings. And that's really the last thing you want to do. So
exactly. We're up on another break already, Laura. Listeners, please stay tuned. We're learning wonderful insights from Laura Reif about special ed and how to remove stigmas that really affect how the child proceeds.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. Before we get back with our guest, Laura Reif, I just want to mention, if you feel free to go to my website, randyrolfe.com. That's Randy with a Y, Rolfe with an E on the end. And there's some free downloads there and a lot of good information. And also be sure and know that all our interviews are on archive on voiceamerica.com. So if you like what you're hearing today, there's lots of other great shows. And really appreciate Laura Reif being on the show. We're talking about how to end the stigma associated with special ed, which often affects parents and teachers and then affects how the children feel about themselves, which may make their challenges a whole lot harder to deal with. And we were just talking about how if a special ed child is acting out, instead of reacting like we might from ego or from authority, try to understand where they're at, the frustration, the anger that they have about being misunderstood, and really have a conversation with them. So I appreciated so much what you were saying, Laura, about having a conversation that opens up an environment of trust. And if you are in a classroom as a teacher, and you are able to respond with that kind of patience and maturity, you're not only helping the child get in touch with their own feelings and calm down, but you're actually showing the other students a better way to deal with this kind of situation. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And once you have that established, then really what happens over time is that you don't have those types of issues in your classroom, because the kids know that you're not going to engage in that, and they know that it's kind of an exercise in futility if they're going to try to challenge you. So, of course, some kids will get angry and go off and things like that, but, you know, it really lessens the chance that that's going to happen, and the way they communicate with each other, too. Like you said, it kind of is contagious. So I definitely agree with that.
That's really cool. So some parents and teachers, they get into a pattern of reward and punishment to try to get a special ed child to try harder or to do the exercises they're supposed to do for their special ed accommodation. How do you deal with grades and how to get behaviors to improve in the whole reward system?
I think rewards for kids need to be really meaningful. I think we get caught up in, if you do this, I'll give you this, you know, type of situation, when really what they're doing their schoolwork. That's something that they should naturally be doing, and I don't feel like they need a reward for doing what is expected of them and expected of every student in a school. However, when they bring their grades up and if they curb their behavior, then I absolutely feel like there should be some recognition. But I feel like it should be really fun, and it should be really, like, involving everyone. Because if you have a student that has bad behavior, obviously the whole class knows about it, and they've been interrupted. Their learning's been interrupted by them. They probably might be a little, as much as they're entertained by the big show, they're probably a little frustrated with it. It gets old after a while. So if the behavior changes and the grades start to go up and you see improvement, I would reward the entire class. I would do something to say, like, okay, so-and-so has been doing so great, and she's gotten X amount of points or X amount of this or X amount of that. I'm going to give the entire class an extra 15 minutes of free time because of Johnny. Thank you, Johnny, for doing such a great job. And now Johnny, instead of being the kid that everyone's frustrated with and he's the misfit and kids are like, oh, God, he's going to have another fight, things like that, now he's the hero of the class. And everyone's like, oh, my God, Johnny, you did such a great job. Keep it up. And they'll encourage him to keep having this good behavior, because now everybody's involved and he's the hero, and probably never felt that type of reinforcement before and encouragement. And that, again, for that type of child who's always quote unquote bad, is really powerful. They like it, you know, as much as they like to be bad, they'd rather be good.
Yes, I think that's such an important point, because sometimes parents and teachers, they get so used to one particular child just being bad, you know, being naughty,
right,
being disruptive, and
but
they get the reward of attention. But
right,
if they could get that same attention by being good, I think every child would choose to be excelling rather than causing trouble.
Right. You can do the same thing at home as a parent, you know. All the kids get to stay up an extra half hour on Friday night and watch a movie or something like that, where, again, the kid in the household who is having the bad grades or exhibiting the bad behavior now is the hero of the house instead of the bummer of the house. And all the kids get to have something extra because of their good behavior. Again, that's something they probably never felt within the household. So that's really powerful as well to do as a parent. So those are the types of things that I recommend.
That's wonderful. That's a great insight. And it really creates a culture of encouragement and that you're all working together, basically.
Right.
Instead
absolutely.
Of the adversarial kinds of things that happen.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little more about Naomi?
Absolutely. I love Naomi. She is an inspiration of just a culmination of many of my students. And I really wanted to write a book that addressed the situation that kids with dyslexia or learning disabilities are going through. But I wanted it to be really something that all kids could relate to, because all kids kind of struggle with the same thing no matter what their difference is. You know, Mm-hmm. So Naomi deals with bullying and kind of a not a self not accepted by her family, or struggles with being accepted by her family members as having dyslexia, things like that. So, but kids that wear glasses get bullied. Kids that have braces get bullied. You know, everybody has a difference, things like that. So
right.
What I really wanted to do was pull dyslexia into it, not as the main focus, but as part of the conversation. You know, let's kind of make this a commonplace thing. Now people are talking about it, so it becomes more regular, more of a regular thing that people are like, oh, dyslexia, I know what that is, you know, and they could kind of take it through theirs. But it's a really, really fun, inspiring story about Naomi's kind of her journey through special education and what she goes through inside and outside of the classroom. So the whole series is based on, from start to finish, how she starts out, you know, kind of not being diagnosed but struggling, through being diagnosed, through her IEP meetings and things like that. But again, each book is going to have that as the underlying issue and just dealing with what kids deal with on a regular basis. So that, that's the basis of the book. But the best part about it is her special friend that you mentioned earlier.
Yes. So can we have a hint about that?
Oh, absolutely. And so what Naomi does is that she gets into situations that she has anxiety over, and she needs to figure out good answers to difficult situations. So she kind of goes off into daydreams where she has great adventures, and she goes on these great adventures with her best buddy, which is her dog. And her dog is 100% inspired by my dog. As I was writing the book, I would spend a lot of time at home, in between jobs, and spend a lot of time with my sweet dog. And so this whole character is 100% inspired by his lovely, wonderful demeanor. So, to me, it's important that I really wanted to show, how therapeutic and wonderful the relationship can be between a child and a dog who, you know, for a child that's struggling and having problems, it's a really, I think, an important relationship. That's not exclusive to children. I think dogs are amazingly therapeutic anyways, but yeah. So I'm just really excited about the whole thing. So
it sounds wonderful. And certainly, for what you've described, a child that feels misunderstood and unappreciated and not good about themselves when they have a dog that's devoted and unconditional love and affection. And the dog needs them, wants their attention. And so they kind of pulls them out of themselves too.
Right.
So, it sounds like a great book. So age, are you thinking of when you're writing about Naomi?
I'm targeting between third and eighth grade. That's my target audience, because I feel like the message is Naomi is a character who is actually in fourth grade, and you know the series is going to go on as she gets older and older. But the message that goes along with it and her struggles is something that a child can relate to in any of those grade levels. So that's my target audience there.
That's very cool. Now you have your website. I mentioned about special-education.com. So it's really to help parents and teachers or anybody who's helping children to understand it better. And I've interviewed people before about taking them through the education process and getting the school to give them what they need and that kind of thing. And this area that you're covering is just so critical about how having that, being in that group, being in the special ed group, creates all kinds of ripples that need to be attended to. And
absolutely,
appreciate you for focusing on this.
Oh, thank you so much.
So, what kinds of support and resources do you have on your website for the parents and others that are looking to understand better?
Well, what I've really done is I've created a really fun informational blog that deals with, of course, all the special ed issues. I have invited guest bloggers who are experts in the field, other authors and things like that to come along and kind of share my mission. And people are so interested in this. And so I've had a lot of good response from that and just a lot of valuable resources for parents where they can go for help. different associations that they can go to. You know, there's an association for learning disabilities, for dyslexia, things like that. So there's a lot of resources out there for parents that I don't think that they are all really sure of. So a lot of valuable resources. I've also created a really great special report that I would love to get out to people. If you add your name to my mailing list, it's a free downloadable PDF special report that just has a really, really great amount of valuable information. You can also get a bonus introductory video once you download the special report. But the special report really kind of goes over a lot of what I do in my There's Nothing Wrong with Your Kid coaching program. So this is something that I also offer on my website, which I'm really excited about. For parents, it's mainly for parents that are that have kids that are in the special education system, or that are wondering if they need to identify their kid, if they're having problems. And the real value here that I found with the parents that I've worked with in my coaching program is it kind of creates a really safe arena for them to ask questions and get really personal. Because like we had stated earlier, you know, there's a little bit of a shroud of shame that goes along with special education and having a child that's identified with learning disabilities. And, you know, how terrible for a parent to feel ashamed, you know, so that carries a lot of guilt with it.
Right.
So it's really kind of, I've created this arena of a safe place to talk about this and to get this out in the open and create an understanding. Because like I said earlier also, the parent is faced with administration, special education teacher, regular education teacher, psychologist, you know, maybe a social worker, maybe a speech pathologist, all these people, and they feel really intimidated, so they're not really going to ask some burning questions that they probably need to ask because they don't want to be perceived as weak. You know, does that make sense?
Sure, yes.
So they need some place to go for really good guidance and mentoring. So that's what I really would like, of the value that I offer through this program, and I'm really excited about it. I've gotten some great responses. So
it sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
We're coming up on the end of our show, but I want to ask just a couple of tips that you'd like to share with our listeners at this point, to look at your website for one, but
yes.
But what are a couple of quick tips that we can end the show with?
Really educate yourself and surround yourself with a positive support system. Whether it's within this child's school, whether it's outside, obviously a great coach and mentor like Laura Reef would be, would be amazing. And really be well prepared for the IEP meetings. Again, the individual education program meetings. Know what questions to ask. Know who should be involved. Know what kind of supplementary programs are going to be used, how the IEP is implemented. All those things are really important. And then I think the most important thing is to really prepare your child for possibly being misunderstood and possibly being bullied, and talk to them about it and arm them with knowledge and empower them with their knowledge so that they can really stand up to these situations in a positive way. I think that to me is the most important.
That's great. Great advice. I really appreciate you being a guest on Family First, Laura.
Thank you so much.
Laura Reef, look up her book. Is it available now, The Adventures of Naomi Noodles?
It is still in development at the moment, but it'll be on my website the moment that it's available.
Excellent. So go to her website, about-special-education.com. And thank you so much, Laura. I appreciate it.
It's been wonderful. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Happy holidays.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.